John Gambling with special co-host Mayor Michael Bloomberg on News Talk Radio 710 WOR. Now, here are John Gambling and Mayor Michael Bloomberg.
And a happy Friday to you all. Welcome aboard. Here we go. 8 minutes after 8 o'clock on the John Gambling Show. And yes, Mayor Michael Bloomberg is here. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning. Going to be hot, but not as hot as yesterday. And it was tougher to get going this morning. I don't know why. As you get older, you know?
I loved the piece of audio I heard of you. I guess it was yesterday or maybe the day before during the hot spell. You were over at a cooling center and you were calling bingo. I thought that was...
Yes,
that was probably a place that nobody ever thought Michael Bloomberg would go.
But out of the five or so numbers I called, only one got a shout out. Yay! I was not a particularly good random bingo caller.
Nobody screamed bingo.
Aside, when it is hot, you know, just wear light clothing, drink a lot of water, don't exercise at noon in the middle of the sun. I don't care how strong you are, it's just not a smart thing to do. Just move it. And it also helps if you can, your heavy electrical use things, move it to off hours. So running the clothing, washing machine and the dryer, if you did it in the evening, it'd be a lot better for everybody because in the middle of the day is when everybody's using air conditioners.
Did you get any update from Con Ed?
I had a big meeting with them 2 days ago. They keep improving. They say they're in better shape than ever before, and so far, no problems.
All right. The hot weather causes people to want to go to the beach, and unfortunately, yesterday, a tragedy, 16-year-old girl shot with...
It was a day off from school. Teachers had to work, but the kids got the day off, called Brooklyn Queens Day, I think, at least in those two boroughs, they got the day off. And it does, you know, we beef up police because it does have a history of having a higher crime. Some of the kids, you know, it's hot and they irritable and no excuse whatsoever. So the police are trying. We've questioned some people, from what I understand, but not anybody.
No arrests.
Not so far. Hopefully we will find out. These things you generally do because people talk.
Just another example of a life lost because of illegal guns on the street?
Hey, we've gotten a lot of guns off, but there's more guns in this country than there are people. I mean, if you look at other countries, they just, you know, in Western Europe, they don't have the gun problem. They have plenty of other problems, not suggesting this is the only problem, but it would be very helpful, is a nice way to phrase it, if Congress would have some courage to stand up and just enforce the laws that are on the books. No, I mean, you just got to stop people from being able to buy guns without a background check at this gun shows. It's called the gun show loophole. You got to stop dealers who sell guns knowingly to kids and to people with criminal records. You can be on the no-fly list but buy a gun. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. It has nothing to do with the Second Amendment, nothing to do with hunting, nothing to do with protecting yourself. This just, if you just would enforce the laws of don't sell to kids and people with psychiatric problems and people with criminal records, you would make a big difference. There's 400,000 Americans that have been killed since 1968 when RFK, JFK, and Martin Luther King Jr. were assassinated. And that's more Americans than we lost in World War II.
Insane. In this morning's Daily News, there is an op-ed piece by you and Attorney General Eric Schneiderman about micro-stamping.
Micro-stamping is done in a number of places. When a bullet goes out of a gun barrel, it spins. There's a rifling, they call it, on the inside of the barrel. Because if it's spinning, it tends to hold its course a lot more straight and forward, more accurately, I guess is the right word, without deviating. And each rifling has its unique characteristics.
And so every gun is identifiable.
Right. Now, there's also on the casing, the thing that holds the powder and that the bullet comes out of, that's where you want to stamp the casing, because we find the casings, even if you can't find the bullets or if the bullets get destroyed when they hit something, the casing doesn't get destroyed. It just gets popped out of the gun. And a lot of times, because nobody wants to stick around and try to pick them all up, the casings are the evidence the police had, and if they could match those casings to the gun that used it, it would make a big difference.
And
we came very close to having a micro-stamping bill passed in Albany.
What can be the downside?
The downside is that the people who voted against it. Basically, they feel that somebody's going to support their opponent in the next election. That's the downside. They can say, oh, no, no, it's a First Amendment right. You don't have a First Amendment right to go kill people. If you use a gun, I'm sorry, I don't think you have very many rights, period. I mean, this is not something that we do to you. This is something you do to yourself. Getting a gun and trying to kill somebody is not a good thing. And my sympathies are a lot more with the victims than they are with the shooters.
Anthony Weiner, I know what you've said. You know, we've got an election coming up next year, and the people of Queens constituents can vote him out. My question to you is not what you think of the congressman, but should we hold elected officials to a higher standard than we do maybe the rest of us?
Well, I think the answer to that question is yes. I've always thought that when an elected official commits a crime, or when you or I steal money from the public, it's worse than if we steal money from another individual. Unfortunately, we say, oh, it's the government. Don't worry about it. The government is us. And it's a much bigger crime if you steal from everybody than if you steal from one, or if you, and that sort of begs the question that you asked is different standards. I think the Constitution basically says everybody should be treated equally. They are already held to a higher standard because of the publicity. You know, you do something, the press doesn't bother to pay attention to it. If you're an elected official, it's front page headlines and editorials and op-ed things. So we already do hold people to a higher standard. But in this case, you know, we have immigration and the guns we just talked about. We have a deficit that's out of control. As I was walking out of City Hall this morning, I saw on television a quick flash. Canadian unemployment rate just went down again. Ours is going up. There's some big problems in this country, and both sides of the aisle, both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue, have got to focus on fixing this and stopping all this back and forth and partisanship. But it's we got to get back to work. Let's stop this stuff. And the front page of the paper should be about whether or not we're providing health care to people who need it that we can afford. It should be about how we get people into this country to create the jobs we need. And to take the jobs that Americans won't take, but that society deems important to us. The gun issue, you can go right down the list. There's issue after issue. The economy seems like it's, I don't know if it's going into a double dip. Those are cute things that people write about, but it's not running away on the upside, that's for sure. And it's not creating the kind of jobs we need or the number we need. And I think there are a variety of reasons. We can talk about that if you want. But the bottom line is there are more important things than what's been on the front page of the papers.
Alec Baldwin, great mayor?
Yeah, I was asked that yesterday. I think I've met him a couple times. If he wants to run, great. He has time to run, but he's got to move into the city. He is not a city resident, from what I read in the paper.
Okay. We'll have to wait and see on that one.
Absolutely. You would love it because it gives you something to talk about.
Well, absolutely so. But I think that he might enjoy acting more than maybe doing what you do.
Well, you know, if he stays out of... I only want him to stay out of my business for the next 935 days. And I do not, for the record, do not plan to go into his business, even after that.
Oh, you're kidding. You're not going to become an actor.
I don't think so. I was with Matt Damon the other night. And name dropper. I met Michael Douglas's father. He introduced himself to me the other night. I was going in to do an event of Curtis Lee was Guardian Angels.
Oh, it was Guardian Angels.
Quick
sure.
Talk. And Kirk Douglas introduced
Kirk
himself.
Kirk Douglas was there?
He was in the lobby,
of the hotel. Okay.
And he introduced himself. And Michael is a casual friend of mine. I've known him for a long time. His mother had a resort in Bermuda, and I don't think I ever met her. But anyway, see, I was so impressed that I met Kirk Douglas. Yes. Big deal.
Actually, and he walked up to you and said hello.
Well, he didn't walk up. Mayor. He was sitting there, but he said.
Very nice. Mr. Mayor, sit tight here. I would like to talk to you about the economy. We'll do that when we come back. 17 minutes after 8 o'clock. Mr. Mayor, if you're wondering why the Chicago music, it is Chicago Bumper Music Friday here on the John Gambling
Show. I recognize that right away. I'm sorry you didn't start this 25 years ago.
Well, better late than never, right?
Absolutely.
You were talking about the economy. What's your view of the economy? How do we yank ourselves out of this? What is necessary for Congress to do and the president?
Well, I think, number one, the economy is spotty. New York is doing better. We're certainly not back to the 07 levels. We certainly have some big budget problems. Our pension costs are out of control, although we are working with the unions and trying to do something. But if you take a look at the whole country, there are a number of things that stand out. Number one is confidence. President's job is to instill confidence in the banks that if they lend money, they'll be able to get repaid. Nobody's going to try to protect the person they lend it to at their expense. It's their money. They don't have to lend. So if you don't protect them, they're just not going to lend. And they do have money, and it could be put to good use. Then you've got to build confidence in those who are the borrowers. They've got to feel that Congress's regulations aren't going to change every day, and it isn't going to be just partisan of who can buy the most influence and that sort of thing. And then there's the consumer. Consumer has to feel that they're not going to lose their jobs, not going to lose their house. But the first answer to your question is, president has got to build confidence. Now, he's reaching out. He's trying. It's not easy. You can't get your message out in politics except what the press wants to write that you when you say something. They don't necessarily have to publish it at all or publish it in the context you meant it. But I think the president's first job is to build confidence that America is going to be a good place to do business and to work and live, and that we're going to take care of each other, but that the tax burden is not going to grow so much that nobody can afford to live here. Can't move, but whatever. The second thing is immigration. We are a country that has been built by immigrants, and I know there's some people that are anti-immigrant, and they go on and on. There aren't enough jobs and that sort of thing. Immigrants, every study shows, create jobs. They use a lot less services than they pay for, and you know, there's always an abuse, but all of the stuff, they have high crime, not true. Use public housing, we have the statistics, not true. Use the hospitals, very little, because they're young, and most people use most of their care when they're older. Use the public schools system. Most of them don't bring their kids. There are some, but fundamentally, the actuary for Social Security 6 months ago said if we were to deport the 11 million undocumented, Social Security would go bankrupt 6 years earlier. Why? Because they pay into Social Security and they don't take anything out. Most undocumented even pay taxes. Why? Their companies withhold. The companies don't want to break the law. And when it comes time to send a refund, there's no place to send it to. So all of these anti-immigrant things aren't true. But the thing that's most important about immigrants, all the statistics show they are much more likely to start businesses and to take jobs that nobody else will. And that's why this country became the world's greatest country, because of immigrants. It wasn't just automatic. We had to work for it, and we worked for it by making sure we were a welcoming place. So the first is build confidence. Second is open the doors. DREAM Act would not be a bad idea whatsoever, but you got to work the 11 million undocumented. We have to find some ways to make them pay a penalty or whatever, but you can't deport them. Stop this. We're whipping ourselves. We're banging our thumb with a hammer because we think it feels good when it stops. We're not going to deport them, so let's figure out some ways to let them get into the mainstream and contribute. Third thing I would argue is small business. If you look at the improvement in earnings, it's what's called bottom line rather than top line. Companies aren't necessarily selling more. What they're learning how to do is to sell the same amount with fewer people. So they're not creating that many jobs. And yes, if they expand, they will create jobs. But they tend to create jobs for people with skills that are already in the industry, members of the right union, or whatever the case may be. The people that are unemployed don't have those attributes. And so small businesses are where you're going to create, and that's why New York has done much better. Small businesses have non-conventional hiring standards, techniques, if you will. Small business doesn't go look at your resume and double check to see whether you got an A or a B in a course or whatever. Small businesses, if you have something in your background, drugs, criminal records, something, they don't care, they don't even know. Small business people can get through the small business application process. Small businesses train on the job, and most unemployed are just not going to go back to school. They're just too old. People don't do that. So you have to have on-the-job training, and that's not big companies, that's small companies. Small businesses have flexible hours, typically. You know, the manager says, okay, come in an hour late. Big company can't run that way. Big company has to have standards, and everybody's got to follow the rules. It's just the laws of big numbers. You have to have, you run it in different ways. So small and small businesses, automation doesn't help them very much. They typically aren't big enough to buy automation or don't do things where automation makes a big deal. So they're labor intensive. And those are the characteristics that you have to have if you're going to get
people to work.
To
help them, do they need the tax breaks? How would you suggest you help the small business?
You know, a lot of it comes out of the confidence factor I talked about
first. Part one.
Because the entrepreneur has to be willing to put his life savings or her life savings on the line to start a business. Number two, these people they don't make enough money to pay taxes. Tax rates aren't going to impact the small company. They'll impact the big company. They'll get companies to come here versus going elsewhere. So I'm not suggesting for a second that lower taxes wouldn't benefit, but it's not the small businesses. The small businesses much more need top-line growth. They need sales. You talk to any entrepreneur, that's what they'll say. I need somebody to come in the store. I need somebody to buy stuff. I'll figure out how to. I'd love to have the problem of having to pay taxes on earnings. I need sales, and then I need some earnings, and then I can worry about that. So I think some of those things, they're not misguided, but I don't think that's where the big thing is. The trouble the government has is government can only deal in a macro sense and can only deal in policy or big transfers of wealth kinds of issues. Small businesses are day in and day out, mom and pop. There's the old joke that you can tell who owns the store. He's the person at the end of the day when everybody's gone home who's sweeping up, or she is sweeping up. It's build confidence. It's get a lot more immigrants here. I said I gave an example of a city in the Midwest, regardless of the name, a big percentage of the population's left. I said the federal government gave visas to people around the world who would come to that city, live there for 7 years, agree to take no federal, state, or city subsidies, but stay there for 7 years, and then we'd make them citizens automatically, and if they quit before 7 years, we'd track them down to the end of the earth and throw them out. You would fill that city overnight, and it would create jobs. People would find ways. They'd take the old housing that nobody wants. They'd clean them up. They'd build it up with their own hands. They would do things. So small businesses is the third answer. And then there is something to be said for tax policy, but the tax policies are competitive, one state versus another, one city versus another. The bureaucracy. We have a whole program going in New York City to make it easier to start a small business, get through all the permitting and the inspections and the paperwork, which you could have, if you want to open a restaurant, you could have been paying rent on that store, the space, for 6 months to a year before you can open, because you can't get through all the processes. We're trying to dramatically cut it. And Deputy Mayor Goldsmith, that's his expertise, starting to make a big difference in making it easier to open small businesses here. More small businesses open, the more they'll employ the people who are unemployed, not just some mythical person. These are the real unemployed who tend to be older, tend not to have the skill sets that big companies need or the kind of background and specificity they need. So those are the three. Four big things, I guess, if the fourth is the whole efficiency, lower taxes, the things that government can do. But the first three are the real critical ones. President's main job, creating confidence and optimism. Congress's job in doing immigration. Local government's job in helping small businesses get going. And then everybody in the other one.
All right. More easily said than done, obviously. So.
Well, no, we're doing it in New York.
Well, I understand.
In all
fairness. But
okay, you can
country.
Do this. I'd love to tell you I think it's hard. I don't think it's hard. I think it's understanding not what you think the world is, but what the real world is and what people need. And I come back to, you know, keep in mind, Congress deals in big transfers of wealth and policies that suit sound bites. And, I mean, how could you possibly vote against bringing people into this country who would create the jobs that your constituents desperately need? Why on earth would you do that? It doesn't make any sense, except you're worried that a soundbite from one TV station or one newspaper or something is going to kill you and keep you from getting reelected.
I'm afraid you're right on that one. All right, hang tight, Mr. Mayor. It's 8:33. Let me remind you, I have not and I should have, and we already got some folks on the line. 800-321-0710. If you've got a question for Mayor Bloomberg, 800-321-0710. Joe Bartlett's got more news. We're coming right back.
News Talk Radio 710 WOR. The John Gambling Show.
When I'm with you, it doesn't matter where we are or what we're doing. I'm with you, that's all that matters. Time passes much.
Chicago is our Bumper Music Friday group this morning.
Who's going to be next week?
I haven't decided, but if you have some requests, do we have a request from the mayor?
Do I have, as a Friday morning guest, do I
absolutely.
Have a say in it?
Absolutely.
Or do you have to look at all of your Friday guests and take a survey and then negotiate?
No,
and
I don't
be like
do
our
that.
Congress?
No, see, I don't have to worry about getting reelected because
yes,
I'm just
Yes, you do.
Here. Well, I do.
That's your ratings. You have an election every... How often the ratings come out? Every week. You have an election every week.
You're absolutely right.
And don't ever think if your ratings go down, this is going to keep you, babe.
I know. I've been there. The guests aren't that important.
I beg your pardon?
The listeners are very important. The guests are sort of the trimming on all of this. But you and I will discuss if you have some requests.
Thank you very much. My people will get to your people.
Exactly.
Okay.
A little bit later on. The pension deal that the gov is talking about looks like it makes some sense to me, tier six?
Well, I don't think there's any question it makes sense. The question is, can he get it through the Albany legislature? The state constitution says once the state legislature grants a benefit, in New York City's case, we pay for all of the benefits, but they vote them, okay? Once they vote them, even they can't take them away. It's a very smart thing some labor lawyer got into the state constitution. You should find out who that guy is and make him your lawyer. You want him on your side. So there's nothing you can do for the existing, and you could even make the case, I'm not unsympathetic, to somebody who's got a job now and we made a deal with him. Maybe you can make the case, although I would argue things change and no deal
life
goes
does
on.
Change, right?
Life does change. But regardless, even if you believe that once you make a deal, you should stick to it forever, no matter what the change in circumstances are, we don't have any obligation to people we haven't hired yet. And there's an awful lot of people who would still apply, virtually all of them, because these are good jobs, would still apply to work for the state or the city, even if their pension benefits were going to be less. The bad news about pension reform is the reforms don't save any money until many years down the road. The good news is, if you don't start now, but elected officials say, well, I'm not going to be around many years down
the road.
It's like
drilling for oil.
Right.
Sure.
So, if a union came to you and said, well, we'll take in, if for a salary raise today, we'll give you some pension savings down the road, you can't do that deal. You have to be really stupid to do that because down the road the savings will never materialize. The legislature will, in a good year, when everybody's feeling good, give them back. But the money you spent will go on and on and on. But I commend the governor for addressing the issue. He said he would. I think he should be out there fighting for this thing. He should be out there campaigning, and we will stand up and support him up, down, and sideways. Now, let me come back to say also, at a local level, because that's the world I live in, I hope the governor gets this done, and we'll tag along with him. At a local level, we are working with many of the unions. Some of these unions really are very well led, and I think... to say they're unfairly criticized, they're probably not. They're not that much criticized anyways, but to the extent they are, a lot of it is unfair because their job is to represent their members. I've said this before. My problem is that city government, which represents the people, has given away things for too many times, and the state government and the federal government, they give away things that the public can't afford, but they do it because it helps their re-election campaign. And now the public has got to stand up to government and say, well, it's your problem because you gave it away. Now find some ways to get it back or to reduce our expenses and don't give it away again. Is the public going to do that? Probably not. The unions are well organized on one side. The public's not well organized on the other. But, union's job is to ask for as much as they can, and nothing wrong with that.
That's right, democracy.
New
York City Comptroller John Liu last week or the week before said the pension problem's not nearly the big deal that you make it. It'll solve itself in 5 years.
I don't know where those numbers come from. There's no rational independent group that would say that. In fact, John Liu's own studies show just how bad the problem is. So I think that campaign speeches have to be separated from reality. And his office put out studies showing what everybody knows. Our pension costs have gone from $1.5 billion a year to $8.5 billion in 10 years, $7 billion more annually. Let's assume he was right and it didn't keep growing. It'd still be a disaster. But he's wrong. It is going to grow. There's just this built-in escalators. The percentage of, some people say it's because of the stock market that our costs are going up. That is just patently not true. The way the accounting works is if the market goes down, we have to make up the loss, but you make it up over, it's 6 or 7 years, and it's very little at the very beginning.
To smooth out the
first, yeah, right. First year, it's zero. Second year, it's negligible. Well, the decline and the response back was only 2 years. And then the same thing, if you make a lot of money in the stock market, you can take the benefit slowly over time. So those, and this decline and recovery was rapid enough that those things cancel out. And if you take a look, you plot the S&P 500 versus our pension costs, there's no discernible connection whatsoever. The second thing people say is, oh, well, you gave salary raises. That's why pension benefits costs have gone up. It is true we gave salary raises. The average city agency, John, in 10 years, their expenses went up 28% with inflation going up 33%. So we gave, the raises we gave in retrospect were not out of line. They were less than inflation, which the private sector can almost never accomplish. So we did fine there. The exceptions are 105% increase in education expenses. Why? Because we were underpaying our teachers, I thought, and they were losing them to Nassau County and other places, and education's number one thing. So we have raised the cost of the Department of Ed by 105%. All other agencies, 28%. The big thing is our pension costs have gone up something like 515%, and the reason is you can see it. Pensions as a percentage of salaries keep going up. So whether the salaries go up or not, it's not the issue. It's we're giving more benefits. There are all these presumption bills. The presumption bill says if anything of a bad happens to you, we're going to assume that it's on the job caused. And so if you had, you know, something from childhood and all of a sudden it's presumed and the city, they say, well, the city can appeal. You have no practical ways to really do that. The pension costs are out of control. The controller couldn't be more wrong. And his own studies say exactly what I just said.
Let's talk about the taxi cabs, livery drivers. What was that indicative of? Just the problem or the annoyance
outside
level?
Outside of three-quarters of Manhattan, in all fairness, you can't get a cab, okay? The law says these liveries can't stop. They break the law all the time. The yellow cabs don't go to these neighborhoods. There's no question that people are ill-served in the city. So, okay, you can do something. The trouble is every time you make a deal, either the yellow cabs love it and the livery cabs hate it, or the livery cabs love it and the yellow cabs hate it. And we've been trying very hard to find some compromise. And no matter what you do, both sides think they can outweigh you. I'm telling you this. We are going to start enforcing the law on livery cabs a lot more than we have before. And if they break the law and pick up illegal hails, we're going to fine them. Having said that, yellow cabs, we're going to start enforcing the laws here more. This is just craziness. We cannot continue to go where every group says, well, I'm going to give more money. One group tends to support the city council. If you go and look where the money comes from, which is public information, you'll see that, I forget which is which, let's say it's the yellow city and livery upstate or vice versa. One supports them and one supports upstate. And we need both legislatures to vote. David Yaske has worked very hard on this. He's been working hard with Deputy Mayor Goldsmith and Steele. And we have to provide a good service to the people outside of...
What about the challenge on the handicap cabs? I mean, it just seems impractical to have every cab.
We have to find a ways to comply with the law but it is impractical to have every cab. The cab drivers just won't drive cabs. They can't afford them. And, you know, it's I'm sympathetic, and I want to find a ways where, you, if you're handicapped, you can get a cab. But the bottom line is that we think we can do it without requiring every cab to be so expensive that nobody can afford them.
All right, Mr. Mayor, we got some folks hanging on the telephones. We are going to get to them. 800-321-0710, but the rest of you hang on. In just a moment, we'll do that. This portion of the program is brought to you by Silver Palette.
The John Gambling Show. News Talk Radio 710 WOR.
The feeling is clear, clear as the blue sky on a Sunday day. Everything was you.
It is Chicago Bumper Music Friday here on the John Gambling Show, and maybe next week, if you have someone else that you would like to hear, I don't mean Chicago, but something specific, you and I will, you can tweet me and...
What about Crosby, Stills, and Nash?
That's a good one. I like that one.
Thank
Actually,
you very
that's
much.
That's a good one. Yeah, okay, well, in the 8 o'clock hour next week, we'll definitely do Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
I never had
Nash.
This impact before in the music world.
Well, here you go. Could be a whole new career.
This is the highlight of it probably already.
I understand. Before we get to the phones, you got a tweet
first
there?
Tweet. Ron supports you, too, is the name of the sender. He asked, what would the effects on New York City and the United States be if Republicans, it's Republicans and Democrats, block an increase of the debt limit? Because both sides...
Good question.
Yeah, and both sides have to vote, and both sides want something, don't want to give up something. It would be... we'd survive, but it'd be devastating. I mean, nobody was going to view us as a country where government really is in control and focusing on the issues rather than politics if we were to do something as crazy as that. There's an enormous amount of government debt out there, and in theory, we would be in default. In practical terms, no, people would get repaid, but it makes us look like, if you'll pardon the expression, what would be called in the olden days, is probably not PC now, a banana republic. And then you can't do that. America is too important and too responsible. So I assume they'll come to an agreement.
All right, let me go with Joe in Syosset. Joe, your question for the mayor real fast. Go ahead.
Hey, good morning.
Good morning.
I'm just curious, has anybody looked at the costs, what it incurred when we took over the MTA bus company, when we took over the private lines?
It's funny. We took it over, and there was zero stories in the paper, zero criticism. If you think about it, the MTA really did it right, and it was the right thing to do because nobody complained. I remember all of the angst and aggravation and craziness to get that done, and then it took over. Is it a good economic deal? It's hard to tell. You can't break out any one thing, but it certainly has provided a better service, and I'm sure somebody's going to call in and somebody's going to find somebody that doesn't like it. But this has been now going for 4 or 5 years since it took over, and it's been a big success.
All right. Let us try number six. That's Fran. Hello, Fran. What's your comment?
Yes, good morning. I have a compliment for Chancellor Dennis Lolcott.
Oh, he'll be thrilled.
I attended the College Point Memorial Day Parade with a few neighbors, and I saw him interacting with the Francis Lewis High School Junior ROTC, and he was speaking with, you know, just interacting with all with the students, walking alongside of them, and all of a sudden I said to myself, I think that's the chancellor, and I started waving. I became so excited, and he saw me, and he came right over, shook my
hand. Fran, he is going to be ecstatic. His wife is beaming. His wife's going to say, don't let it go to your head. I'm going to say, Dennis, get back to work when I see him in another 20 minutes. This guy, all kidding aside, this guy works very hard. I think this is last week alone. He had something like those 1,700 principals and 700 parent coordinators and PTA presidents that he's had meetings with. He sends out emails all the time trying to get to the 75,000 teachers we have. Dennis is very big into telling people what we're doing, why, and saying, look, we got to make a decision. Dennis was there as Joel Klein's partner in terms of all the reforms that Arne Duncan and the president talk about and say were a role model for everybody. And he's taking what Joel did and building on it, which is what he should do and what I hope whoever comes after him will do. But I'll tell him he'll be thrilled.
Phil in Queens, what's your question for the mayor?
Hey, I'd love for you guys to take more questions, but my question is, the University of Chicago School of Law and School of Economics had a book in its third printing, John Locke Jr., More Guns, Less Crime. All over this country, the FBI statistics and every other indicia says we're in jurisdictions where there are more guns, there are less crime.
Phil, I don't know, I haven't read the book, but the numbers are, if you have a gun at home, you are 21 times more likely to get shot than if you don't. I mean, just think about it. Somebody bangs on the door, I'm going to kill you. You say, wait a second, let me see. Now, where did we hide the lock, the key to the lock, and I put the ammunition someplace else? Can you wait while I get out my gun? By this time, the guy's blowing you away. It's just not true. And nobody suggests, Phil, that you shouldn't have the right to a gun to protect yourself. If that's what you want to do, that's fine. I personally think that having a gun at home, particularly if you have kids, is just a terrible idea. The likelihood of the kids getting the gun and having a disaster are much greater than somebody breaking in and you needing it to protect yourself. But if you want to do it, I'm there to protect you. I'll fight to my death for your right. I believe in the Second Amendment. Every state and city have the right to their own gun laws in terms of carry and permits and that sort of thing. But we should not put guns in the hands of people with criminal records. We should not put guns in the hands of people who have recognized psychiatric problems. We should not put guns in the hands of children. The federal law says we should have a background check. We should do it for everybody, not just those people who buy guns in gun stores. It's no matter where you buy it, you should do the same thing. But New York City, we have fewer guns, Phil, in Queens is where you live, and in all the other four boroughs as well. We have fewer guns, and crime is at record lows. So there's just not a correlation between more guns and less crime. The real correlation is fewer guns, less crime, and New York is the poster child to show it. We're the safest big city in the nation.
Are you marching Sunday?
I will certainly march Sunday. My hope is the rain stays away. Forecast is iffy for the whole weekend. A little bit better tomorrow than Sunday, but let's see. Puerto Rican Day Parade is one of the great parades in our city. The olden days of lots of problems, long gone. Today it's safe. Come out and enjoy one of the great parades.
Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young next week for you. There you go. We've got lots more of the John Gambling Show straight ahead. Glad to have you aboard here. It is 9 o'clock.